we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, June the 1st, 2018. I'm your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here right now from Vancouver Island by our co-host, Jillian Walters. Hello, Jillian.
Hi.
Nice to hear from you. So before we get started, I just wanted to give a special shout out to our co-host Jen Dobell, who is celebrating her birthday tomorrow. And I just want Jen to know, I know she's probably listening, that she is so special to us at Co-op Radio and Animal Voices, and we couldn't do the show without you, Jen. Happy birthday. Have a great birthday weekend.
Happy birthday, Jen.
Yes. So on today's show, we have a feature interview welcoming back Toronto-based animal advocate and musician John Sackars, as well as fellow animal advocate Amanda Barker. They recently completed a cross-country Canada journey, which they did with no money, and today they will be speaking about their traveling adventures and vegan outreach, plus minimalism and freeganism. So stay tuned for that. That's coming in a bit. Now, Jillian and I, we have both just returned from animal activist boot camp, right? Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so it's a 7-day animal liberation conference, which was hosted in Berkeley, California by the international animal rights groups Direct Action Everywhere, the SAVE Movement, and Anonymous for the Voiceless. And at this conference, 1,200 animal activists came from around the world and converged together for a week of this intensive training. Now, every day was spent learning and actively practicing skills to take our animal activism to the next level, as DXC, the SAVE Movement, and AV have been doing for several years now. So if you're not familiar with what these groups do, we'll explain a little bit here. So DXC is known for literally disrupting the status quo by going into public places and places of business that support animal exploitation and calling out these places on their exploitation, and also to the public as well. So they have also been conducting multiple open rescues in the U.S. and abroad, from rescuing animals in factory farms, dogs from the meat industry in China, and beagles from the animal testing industry. Jillian, do you want to tell us a little bit about the SAVE Movement and what they do?
Sure. I was just going to say DXC also, with their grounding philosophy and nonviolent resistance.
And also the SAVE Movement as well. It's a love and compassion-based movement, and that's what we were all there for. So what does, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about SAVE if they haven't heard about them before?
The SAVE Movement, we have a chapter here in Vancouver that meets on Saturdays to bear witness. And bearing witness is giving love, sending your love and compassion towards animals that are heading to slaughter.
Right. We hold vigils, and that, like Jillian said, that happens. We have a Vancouver Chicken Save Vigil that happens here every Sunday from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse on the corner of Hastings and Commercial. Everyone is welcome to attend, and also Surrey has a chapter as well, a Chicken Save as well, and they have monthly vigils, and they will be having their next vigil at the Sunrise Poultry Slaughterhouse, which is located at 13542 73A Avenue in Surrey, and that's from 1 to 3 p.m. And they're on Facebook as well if you want to find out more details. And then we have Anonymous for the Voiceless, which is known for doing what is called the Cube of Truth, which is where activists form in a square, a cube, holding laptops and other screen devices, showing footage, usually undercover footage, of just the animal exploitation industry. And then people, there's those of of us who are there as well who have conversations with the public and get them to engage and to open a dialogue about what's happening to animals. So we practiced all these forms of direct activism throughout the week. We held a funeral in front of City Hall where we spread the ashes of four victims of the farming industry, and we buried a baby piglet named Chloe. We held 13 simultaneous cubes of truth in downtown San Francisco. I think that was last Sunday. We conducted 50 simultaneous disruptions at businesses of animal exploitation in Berkeley. We held an all-day vigil at two slaughterhouses in Stockton, California. And last Saturday, we took over the streets of San Francisco for an animal liberation march of over 1,000 people. So of all these days, not including the last day, Jillian, but of all the other days, what is a highlight that you would like to talk about?
You know, I'm still processing what happened. It was so unbelievable, amazing. The first thing I take away is the grounding in nonviolence, communication, nonviolent resistance. The whole conference embodied that philosophy, and I take that with me. And I have, and although I'm totally drained, I feel energized in terms of my own activism going forward.
I feel that way as well. I'm also processing the whole week. Like, I just, every time, there's just so much to talk about. I mean, even just thinking about it on the drive here, I had tears shedding down my face just because it's still so, like, I still have so much to process. Like, the things that we saw were just so intense and meaningful. I wish everyone could see the things that we saw. And one thing that comes to my mind is bearing witness at, we went to two slaughterhouses. Second slaughterhouse, there's the DXC chapter there has a relationship with the slaughterhouse where they allow activists to get right up close to see what's happening to the chickens who are being slaughtered. And I will always have those images in my head. It was so profound. It was so impactful. You brought your son to the conference. There were some kids there. Would you like to say just a few words about bringing children to Animal Activist Boot Camp?
Yeah, I think it's more important for children to know the truth.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not pretty, than to be lied to. And that's been my philosophy, like raising Kingston since he was a baby. I always wanted him to know the truth. And he, you know, I let him choose what he wants to do, and he wanted to be there, and he wanted to witness, and he did.
Other children witnessed that too, and I just feel that parents often think that that's too brutal, it's too harsh for a child to see, but I saw with my own eyes children witnessing everything that we did this week. They were engaged in activism, and you and the other parents there are raising young activists who are going to be changing the world. So thank you, Jillian, for bringing Kingston and to the other parents out there. I just think that was amazing. This conference was so affordable, too, I want to mention. Only $60 for the whole week. That included 10 meals. We got a T-shirt, and then all the activities that were planned in so much great detail.
Yeah.
We had people there from all over the world, such as Germany, Colombia, Australia, and England, just to name a few countries. I also want to mention, I said that we took over the streets of San Francisco last Saturday, I think that was, with our 1,000-plus person animal liberation march. We are having a similar march here next Saturday, June 9th in Vancouver, the march to close all slaughterhouses, and I want to see as many people there as possible, because we will be doing the same as we did last year, taking over the streets of downtown Vancouver. That starts at noon at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
And I believe the night before, they're going to have Anonymous for the Voiceless on the Friday.
A Cube of Truth.
The weekend.
Yes.
Or, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Cube of Truth.
Thanks for mentioning that. So we only have about 4 minutes left. I want to talk about the last day. So the last day of the conference was the total culmination of like all the skills we had learned, including an intensive, many hours long workshop the day before on non violent resistance training. Mm-hmm. So on the last day of the conference, that was this Tuesday, we made history. There were about 500 activists there. We made history at a factory farm holding over 1 million suffering animals in Petaluma, California. There was an open rescue that took place. 37 laying hens who were suffering in these factory farms, they were rescued. And there was a live video happening. I encourage everyone to watch this video. You can see it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, or at Direct Action Everywhere. As of last night, there were 220,000 views. And I will say that this video is one of the most gripping, heart-pounding, intense and moving videos that you will ever see. It's like watching a reality show because that's what it is. I don't know if you've seen the whole thing yet, Jillian. I have not myself. But we don't have time to go through everything right now that happened. But I will say that there were 500 of us there. 37 suffering egg-laying hens were rescued that day.
40 activists were arrested.
Yes, and that is because, okay, so this was the whole point behind it is there is a law in California, California Penal Code 597 states that if you see an animal in distress, you are within the law to assist the animal to get him or her help, just like you would do if you saw a dog being abused at someone's property, right? So this is what we went in with, is this law. We had documentation of prior undercover investigation that had been done at this factory farm of animals suffering, had photos. We had a legal statement stating that it was within our right to go onto the property. And what basically happened is over 45 police officers showed up. They said that animal control would be coming to conduct an immediate investigation. That did not happen. They were stalling, I believe, to get all those police officers on site because it went from one police officer to then I counted 45 and more. And they were all lined up there. They had their guns. They had their batons. They had their zap straps. And so 40 activists who were prepared to commit civil disobedience. They crossed the line, the property line, and they were promptly arrested. So
it was incredibly moving, and I recorded some music. We sang actually the whole week. The thread that held us together, I think, was music, because Jason Oliver and Eva guided us in song the entire week.
There were so many talented musicians there, and I have to say, like, every time I hear one of those songs, I was listening to what we're going to play, and it makes my heart pound. It makes me cry. So we're going to play a little bit of that right now, a little bit of the singing that we did that day as we were supporting the activists as they crossed the line. I will never forget this day. I believe we made historic change for the animals. And I want to thank the organizers, especially DXC, for putting on an amazing week. Sign up for next year. You've got to go if you're an activist. And hopefully we'll be able to talk more about this on a future show. So thanks for joining me, Jillian. Here's the clip.
Okay.
Freedom from their cages.
Freedom from their cages.
Freedom from their cages.
Freedom from their cages.
Keep on loving boldly.
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 Never turning back.
Never turning back.
Never turning back.
What is roots music anyway? For me, it's any music that is inspired out of experience and community. Music born without commercial agenda. Whether it is called folk, country, blues, gospel, world music, rhythm and blues, it is music that enriches our communities, our experience of life and connection. Hello, I'm Doug Lang, host of Better Days, a radio program that includes roots music and spoken word from around the corner and around the world. It is broadcast every Saturday from 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific time and provides you with 2 hours of music worth knowing. I invite you to join me. That's Better Days every Saturday morning, 7 to 9 a.m. right here at CFRO 100.5 FM.
I am here live at the SFU campus in Burnaby with John Sackers and Amanda Barker. Hello.
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 You both have some really exciting stories to tell after hitchhiking across Canada with no money. Why don't we start by each of you telling us your vegan journey or your vegan story and how you guys met and your freeganism story.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us today. I'm Amanda. I'll start by saying my vegan story. I unfortunately was raised on animal products my whole life. I never thought about it until I once had a friend coming to live with me, and I knew that she was vegetarian. And before she came, I thought one night, I just support her. I eat what she wants. We cook. She teaches me a few meals, and I will just support her. I wasn't attached to meat. I was just doing it because it was habit. And she came, taught me a few things. We didn't have any meat in the house. We did have cheese sometimes. And we were buying Happy Eggs at that point. And then I watched the documentary from Gary Yourofsky. And I called her, and I told her, I think I want to go vegan. And she did. And doing it together really helped, having that support. And yeah, it was a wonderful opening door to so many other social justice issues and waking up to what was happening to the animals. John, do you want to share your story?
Yes, I grew up in a family where we ate flesh and secretions from animals. And then when I was 27 years old, a coworker of mine at the time, I said, hey, John, did you know that eating animals has been linked to cancer? And I was surprised to learn that. And I went to the library to do more research, and I saw a book called Old MacDonald's Factory Farm. And then I learned about all the cruelty behind, animal agriculture. And I stopped eating animals right away, but then I did some more research because I was still eating some, muffins that had eggs in them and that. And I learned how to do vegan baking and how to be vegan. It took me maybe a month or two to progress into being vegan. And so, yeah, that's my vegan story. And then Amanda and I met in Toronto. I remember going to a Chicken Save vigil, and then someone said, hey, John, there's a female version of you here. And, I think, Amanda, you heard the same thing. Because I've been speaking out against, inequality and our monetary system, how I think it's cruel to make people do things they don't want to do and charge a ridiculous amount of money for housing and food and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that was exactly what happened. I heard it from another woman, too. She goes, oh, you have to meet John Sackers. You are the female version of him, and he's all this anti this and that, and you guys would have a great time. And it was so true right from the beginning. It's very nice to have people who share these ideas about meeting people's needs and how we can help support the community.
How soon after you met did you decide to hitchhike across Canada?
I started freeganism, stopping money totally last July for the 1 year as a project. And I was visiting John while he was couch surfing and taking care of a chicken, a rooster who wears a diaper, which I recently learned they can do. And we were talking about the trip, how I was going to get down to this conference in Berkeley. And I said, I will hitchhike and meet you there. And I said, well, you can come if you like. And yeah, maybe John wants to share what happened.
I'd never hitchhiked before. And now all of a sudden you're asking me, hey, do you want to hitchhike across the country with me, across North America? And I was very intimidated by that idea. So I said, I'll think about it. And I kept changing my mind back and forth for about a month. And then, I was thinking that I should do it, that I've already flown across the country several times, and this would be a totally different experience. And I thought, I'll have a lot of stories to tell. And years ago, I thought I'd try skydiving, and I was nervous about that, but the instructor was so confident that his confidence gave me confidence. And Amanda is so experienced at hitchhiking that her confidence gave me confidence. And then so I decided to go for it. And it ended up being a very fun time. We got rides from 30 people. We started in Burlington, and it took us about 2 weeks to get to Vancouver.
Yeah, when we were at the potluck together the other day, we shared a story about, well, there's several stories. One before was in India that John loves, when I was hitchhiking and it got dark out and I wasn't sure what to do. And I had met up again with some people I had met early in their day. And they were like, yeah, come stay at our family's house. You know, they had a big family. They knew I was in town because I was the only white person and everybody in town knew I was there. And I ended up, when it was dark at night, crawling into bed with his grandmother, who I hadn't met before, just say, good night, and then in the morning got to know them better. But anything can happen during these adventures. And maybe John wants to tell one of our...
The ambulance.
Oh, the ambulance story, yeah. When I was just walking along the road, not even hitchhiking, but with your backpack, people often are aware. And the ambulance pulls over, and they're just, oh, if you're going this way, we give you a ride, which was great and kind, but the people in the back weren't so happy about it because their daughter was in labor, and so the whole time we had over our shoulders sort of the evil look of the mother. But at the end, it was a nice experience for us up front, so getting to talk about things, so yeah.
Before we started the hitchhiking trip, I thought I'd do a bit of research on the internet about hitchhiking and safety. And I read that the biggest concern is just some people's driving. Maybe it's a little something to be concerned about. And that ended up being, what happened was everyone was super duper nice. All the 30 people that gave us rides. But there was one couple and they were very nice and the driving was safe and all of that. But they were doing some things that you shouldn't be doing while you're driving. They were, yeah, drinking alcohol and driving. And they had been up all night. And so then they started smoking crack. And they said it helps us to stay awake. And I've never seen someone smoke crack before. So I found that interesting. The first time I'm ever seeing someone smoke crack is when I'm in the back seat and we're racing down the highway in the middle of nowhere, like with just trees surrounding us. And so when we found there was a service station that we saw, and then we said, okay, we can get out here. But we got their contact information, and Amanda's been in touch with them saying, you know, please don't do that while you're driving, because they were very nice. And, you know, and we just don't want anyone to get hurt. You know, if they crashed into someone, we'd feel responsible. We should have said something to them. So, yeah, we've been in touch with them.
How were your vegan conversations, like, over the 30 rides that you had? What was the most interesting, or what can you tell us about that?
Thank you so much for asking that question, because I often say that hitchhiking is a great form of outreach because it's people we wouldn't normally come in contact with. And there was one gentleman who said at the end that we ruined bacon for him, so high five for that. That was awesome. And there was another really guy we connected with immediately. He had solar panels on his roof, very chill vibe, the cutest. We don't want to discriminate, but one of the cutest dogs we've ever seen, even though we love them all. And he said near the end, because we had mentioned a couple things, like we were out walking, hiking, and we said, we wish all animals were free like this dog. And we mentioned a couple things about the factory farms and the pigs, some of the things we had done. And at the end, he said, I'm definitely going to think deeply about where my food is coming from now. So we appreciated that. And then we just drop little hints because they're helping us so kindly by sharing that we don't want to be that vegan who's pushing anything on them. So,
and I pretty much I'm always wearing something that says vegan on it. Yeah. My hoodie, my t-shirt, my hat. And so that helps drop conversations to, oh, you're vegan, and they'd ask about that. Yeah, not like we're being preachy, we're just sharing information, and you do with the information what you will. And so, yeah, it didn't feel preachy at all. It felt very fun, and it's you know, we care about everyone, and veganism is a win all around. So it's like, you know, empowering people with information, it's like a gift.
Yeah, it's really good that John says that, because I get a bit nervous, especially with friends and family. You might have the same thing. And John will, if we're having a conversation, he will be an extra bit bolder, and I appreciate it, to be like, would you like us to leave you a pamphlet? And they do. They're happy about it. It is sharing information. It's information that's so important to others' lives. And they don't really have to do anything differently, just reach their hands slightly to the right in the grocery store. So there was a friend of mine we left one with, and then when we met some people in the park and we ended up connecting and then camping and staying with them. They had never had a vegan encounter in their life, I don't think. So they made us a vegan dinner, which was basically any vegetable in the fridge they could put on the table. It was so sweet, some olives and pickles and everything. It was very nice. And they were honest. They read the leaflet right in front of us right away and said, this is very true, and we're very open to it. So we appreciate that a lot.
Are you documenting your travels? There's so much richness in what you're doing. I'm wondering, are you writing a book? Are you writing a journal, video?
Thank you for asking that, because I think John and I are quite different, and this is why I like our teamwork. I really want to avoid screens sometimes, and so I just so much want to be in the moment that it's a hard battle between sharing important information. If I hadn't seen that Gary Yourofsky speech, I wouldn't be vegan. I probably wouldn't have even tried freeganism. It led down that path. So I think sharing information is important, but also being in the moment. So John's very good at recording things too.
So I've gotten lots of pictures and video clips of our experiences along the journey, and I've written status updates on Facebook and posted about our experiences. We're going to make a video about that, and as far as a book, I don't know. I kind of feel like there are already so many fantastic books in the world. I feel like I'd be taking attention away from a more interesting book. Maybe I'm just being humble, but yeah, I at least want to make a video about this and maybe write it like a nice long blog post or something like that.
And one more thing that I love, especially when we started our trip, what was really cool, because John said, I'm not going to complain. And Amanda, your experience, you're the boss. And it just made my heart so warm, because he was so open and so trusting to me. And another thing that I really appreciated was he got asked to speak at this conference that we're going to. And his response is that he would rather women and people from different backgrounds sharing the information and being the points of reference for people. And I was so blown away by that. I think it's just so wonderful to have people that could be the leader on speaking, but empowering people who might not be first chosen or might not have always that opportunity. So I just really appreciate that from John.
I'm so glad you shared that piece, because there is that issue right now, and people are speaking about it, that there's so many women activists, like the percentage is so much higher, but the visibility is not there. So I'm John. Woohoo. So why don't we talk about freeganism? Maybe you could explain what freeganism means to you. I've watched a few documentaries over the years, and it's more than just dumpster diving. What can you tell us about it?
There's so much to say. Oh my gosh. I slowly came into it. I had heard the idea just by accident when I was preparing a project for a volunteer position with Camps with Kids. And what had happened was, it was a debate, and I wanted them to have one topic be about minimalism. And this video came up of this gentleman, Daniel Suelo, who's been living about 15 years without money. And so I watched that video, and I was blown away again. I was like, who would have ever thought, you know, the man who quit money. And so then I read a couple, I checked a couple other books, and there were people who had traveled 1 to 4 years and lived without money, mostly to get like practical tips, like how did they do this. I had was sort of all quite quickly on board with why, and then was the how. And so hearing about their hitchhiking, their sharing, the platforms on social media for sharing, and then I tried it slowly, trying to go down and down, little and little, and then last July was when I thought, okay, you know, James Aspie has done the no speaking for a year, and other people want to do these big things that they can do. And I thought this would be something quite different. I don't know of other very public freegans in Canada. There's very public ones that we know in Daniel Suelo, America, one in Germany, a retired woman who quit money in 2009, and Mark Boyle in England, in the UK, who's done it. So the principles of it for me is mostly to increase community and sharing, reduce waste, and that whenever possible to share. One thing we were talking about yesterday is, if we're born in a system where one person owns, quotation marks, an apple orchard with 100 trees, and one person owns a raspberry bush, should that person with the raspberry bush work their whole life to get apples from this person who's just going to throw them away. This is kind of the way it is. We have an abundance of something, but we're not sharing it. We'll even build super secure walls around the orchard so that person can't take what we don't even want. So shifting the mind and the conceptualization about why we are not sharing more when we have such an abundance.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver Co-op Radio at 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I'm learning from Amanda. I'm not quite at that level as far as living without money, but I've been living off not much money, which I'm fortunate to be able to do. I feel very rich in community. I have family members, and it's been 3.5 years now since I've been paying rent anywhere. I've just been couch surfing all the time, and I try to help out wherever I am. And one of my favorite quotes is, life begins at the end of your comfort zone. So Amanda has been inspiring me to try things that make me feel a little uncomfortable, like such as hitchhiking. I'd always use public transportation, you know, trains or buses. So that was something. And dumpster diving, I'd never done that too. And sometimes you feel maybe a little nervous, like someone's going to come out and yell at you or something like that. But Amanda is very brave, and she does this. And I know there's a stigma attached to that. When you talk about dumpster diving, I don't know what kind of people picture. Maybe they picture you going through a garbage can, finding a half-eaten sandwich and eating that. But you're rescuing food that is in great shape. Like, we found a dumpster in Thunder Bay, and there was a bag of frozen berries in there that was still cold. It had just gotten thrown out. We had that for breakfast, and it was really delicious. So we're finding really awesome stuff that looks just as good as the stuff on the shelf. Like, there was a container of strawberries where one had a tiny bit of mold on it. And so we got rid of that strawberry and ate the rest, and it was great. And then I want to talk more about couch surfing. There's a website, couchsurfing.com, and during this trip, the 2 weeks it took us to get across the country, we did something called stealth camping. That's where you're not on a campground. We just found places to set up the tents, and that was great. But there were some nights where it was a little cold, so we were very grateful to find couchsurfing hosts, and they were fantastic, very, very nice people. And we tried to help out. Like, there was one couple, they were painting in their living room at the time, so we helped paint the living room. And there was another place where we helped rake up a whole bunch of leaves. But these people are just kind people, and they like to have some company. Who knows, maybe they're even a little lonely or something sometimes. So they liked having some people over they'd talk about their travels, we'd talk about our travels. So it really felt like it was win-win. Yeah.
Getting back to the freeganism and the food, how did that work traveling? Like, what percentage, like, of food did you find? I'm going to try and steer away from dumpster diving because it's got that negative connotation. What do you have a word for it? Or, like you said, what was the word you used?
Rescuing food.
Rescuing food. Yeah. Yes, rescuing food.
That's a good point about, in my opinion, how much came from the dumpster or the bin or finding it, rescuing it, and how much from sharing. A lot of people do share with you. So when we're hitchhiking and someone has something they want to share, and we have, I think, sort of a need for equality. We also want to give when someone gives to us, and sometimes you're very humbled when you don't have something immediate. When we think of always sharing in a material way, we don't think of, like, you know, visiting an elderly home where they just love a company, playing a board game, and this. It doesn't have to be some exchange of goods. So how much food came from the dumpster? The nice thing is sometimes we had a lot to share, so that's always nice too. When you're going to someone's house, you can bring them. One time we were just using the internet in the donut shop, and they just gave us the box of donuts that they were going to throw in the garbage. So we were going to a host's house, so we can take a box of donuts or just give them out to people, whoever. So I'd say we dumpster dived, or we rescued food about 4 times during our trip, and it was a lot. The thing is, we don't even can't carry that much. So there was times when I was in Europe where I've seen a dumpster so full of packaged bananas that I wish when I got in the car I could have been brave enough to right away have been like, if you want to pull over here, I can fill your car with food, you know? But I just met them, so I couldn't. But yeah, so far it was like that.
Something else I've seen Amanda do as far as freakinism goes is, it never hurts to ask. So she'll ask sometimes. She'll say to the bus driver, I don't have any money. Can I ride for free? Is that how you say it, Amanda?
Yeah, good question. I go onto the bus and I like to try to connect if there's a chance, if it's not rushed, see how they're feeling, you know, how it's going with their energy, and then just say, I don't have change or I don't have money. Is it okay if I come a few stops with you? If they say no, which has happened once or twice, you just say, thank you, have a nice day, and get off the bus. This is not a problem. We were talking this morning in London, Ontario, and Calgary. Along our trip, we found these are places where the bus drivers have explained to us that you can basically always take it for free. They will never check, and they will never give you a ticket if they catch you without a ticket. Meanwhile, in Vancouver and in Toronto, you can get a ticket. They've put the SkyTrain gates now. Am I allowed to say that? He crawled under the gates this morning after my encouragement. Not that I would encourage him to break the rules, but I had followed someone in, and then I said, come on, John, just go under. So he snuck under, and then we went on. It's just a few stops. Because they have gates, they're not going to be checking it as much on the thing anymore. But on the bus, you can still get a fine. We saw this one guy who quit money in Poland, and he puts a badge on. It's like a sign on the front of him that says no ticket in bold letters and explains underneath, I stopped using money 8 years ago. Just a short, very explanation so people know. And that's how he does it. So that's something maybe I would work up to in the future, that you're doing it, but only you know sometimes. So maybe it's better to think about how you can share these ideas with people about a different way of doing it.
One more thing I'd love to share about stealth camping is we were in Banff National Park, and we were looking for a place to camp, and we saw a gorgeous place, and we were just taking pictures, and a park ranger came up to us, and he said, oh, I saw your backpacks. You're not thinking of camping here, are you? And Amanda, you're the one who mainly talked to him. Do you want to share what you said to the park ranger?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me. That's a great story, too. So he asked us, and we just kind of said, what would be the result if people were to camp here? And he basically told us they weren't so much going to fine you, that you might go to court, but not likely that they would show up. But we asked him more why, because it's interesting to talk about the harm that could be done or why they would be concerned. And so he said people would leave a mess. And he said immediately, I don't get the sense you're going to do that. And they would say that then there would be everybody camping there for free. And we're like, great, let people be in the nature, you know. And then we said, where should people stay without money then? And he would say one of the ones where you have to pay, but then realize, okay, that's still costing $30 for a night to put your tent somewhere where when we camped, we didn't need anything. We just were staying there for the night and then kept going in the morning. So that was a nice interaction, and he left. And we had kind of also said at the beginning, there were people living here before Europeans came, and now we've in a way made it illegal for people to just sleep or to just be on a certain area of land. So that was also a nice conversation too.
I also want to share about the hitchhiking. You might be wondering, you know, why would someone pick up a hitchhiker? And so We asked some of these people, you know, why did you pick us up? And they had some lovely stories. Like one guy, he said, oh, I always pick up hitchhikers. And he told us a story. He said one time he was driving and he saw a guy who was really big and strong and kind of like tough looking. And he thought, nobody's going to pick that guy up. I better pick him up. So he picked him up. And there was a young woman who picked us up. And she said, I always pick up hitchhikers. And she said, you two don't look like you're going to kill me. And then she said, one time I did pick up two guys who looked like they were going to kill me. But they ended up being very nice, and they had a nice conversation. So, you know, it's good to not be, not practice lookism and not judge a book by its cover.
I just love you guys. I have to say that. So how do you see the movement, the freeganism movement, and what you've been talking about today? How do you see it going forward? What does your journey look like? What do you see our society shifting towards?
I would have to say that for myself, I'm very curious what's going to happen. The year will end in July that I've officially committed myself to doing this. I've watched these videos of other people, and it's very inspiring, especially because I don't have a partner. Nobody has asked me on a date since I tried freeganism. So I don't have a partner. So as a single person, I think it is quite easy. I would encourage a lot of young people who have family with extra couches and rooms that would share if you're a good company to try it, especially if they're into social justice activism. So I myself think that I would keep going, and the tiny few wants, because when you have money, you can fulfill your wants immediately. I have so many supporter friends that would, if I really was dying for a Clif Bar, might share a Clif Bar with me. So this, I might keep trying, but we'll see. Maybe there's something else that changes. For the movement in general, John and I talk about this because, for example, we love doing interviews about animal rights, and this goes really well, asking people, what do they think speciesism means? Why are we eating animals? Is it necessary? And they're very open on campus. So we're trying to think of interviews like this to talk to people. We talk a lot about this because with animal rights, we think about disrupting the normalcy of the suffering and the animal use. So how do we disrupt that? Because it's so normal to pay money for food and to pay to sleep somewhere. It's so normal. So one way is that's more comfortable for a lot of people is building community. So sharing that way, introducing more people to couch surfing. We read the other day that in Vancouver, there's 25,000 open units. That's not even beds in people's homes. That's full units and 2,300 homeless. So connecting people in ways like in Belgium for refugees, they had social networking that anybody who was looking for a bed would come to a certain location at 10 p.m. and they would try to sort it out so that they'd find extra beds. People who were open to sharing would go and pick up people they might know or comfortable. So things like this where people are immediately engaging with others, not telling that the government should handle it or that this other person should do it. That, like, if we have time and we have a possibility, how can we also meet our own need for security and safety, but do whatever we can. But most of us here, for example, we all love sharings. And most of us who do share don't always have as much to share materially, because that's, in my view, the definition of rich is you're not sharing. You have an abundance of something and you're not sharing it for whatever reason, because you need to meet security when you retire. So some of the other ways we talk about is, for example, if we have a lot of animal rights activists. What about a bunch of people camping out in front of some place where they're calling attention? Maybe John can explain that one better.
Oh, well, I had one idea. Maybe we can try it when we get to California, but with our sleeping bags and get some other activists and do like a sleep-in or something. You know, it's a protest. Why do we say that people can't, you know, if you're not harming anyone, you're not making noise, you're not making a mess, why, who's to say that a person can't sleep in a park or something like that? And as far as the movement moving forward, I think that minimalism is really important too. Like Amanda and I, we don't drink alcohol. And we don't drink other things like a lot of people like coffee and that sort of thing. And we're more minimalist with our lifestyles. I've never had a cell phone. I don't want to have a cell phone bill. I'd like to keep my cost of living as low as I can so that I can spend more time on doing my arts and my activism. And I don't want to, I've worked at many jobs that weren't really necessary and I didn't like them. And they were they tired me out. I would get home and I wouldn't feel like doing activism or... So that's why I'd rather spend my time on collecting experiences as opposed to collecting possessions. And times when I did work at a job, my goal was to buy my freedom. So I would save up as much as I could so I could take time off from that and focus on what I want to do with my life. So I'd like to see more of that, more people becoming minimalist and focusing more on helping their fellow beings.
Yeah, so connected to that, two more things. One, we were talking about, for example, they have rent strikes in Vancouver, and we'd rather focus on big corporate people that have an abundance and focusing on that. So like, for example, if there was a building, a corporate building, apartment building, whatever, with so many people, to encourage, coordinate, reach out to a rent strike in that way. So people not paying their rent for months, 1 month, whatever months. And if everybody does it together, then this causes a change. So ideas like this, talking about platforms like this. And another thing that we talk about is, for example, in Berkeley, if you'd like to come, or maybe ahead of time, I'm giving a presentation on nonviolent communication. And so I think somehow these people who own, quotation marks, these buildings and corporations, they're out there somewhere. How do we connect with them? When we practice our empathetic listening and our honest communication, our goal should be to be very skilled at connecting with people. How can we get in touch with them, what is alive in them? How do we connect their needs with the needs of others to find ways that we can reach each other? How can we talk to them? How can we find common ground? How can we reconnect them with their life-enriching ability? Like, it enriches our lives to enrich others' lives. Our needs are the same for security, shelter, So these people that have so much, how can we connect with them? That's a major goal too, to have this dialogue and move away from any word of capitalism or anything that divides us in our views. And we've been raised our whole life with TV telling us to pursue a want and a luxury item. And it would be great to see billboards, for example, promoting empathy, compassion, how we do that, how we build community, billboards that just talk about potlucks and visiting the elderly and sharing cars and buses in a way that meets everybody's needs. So these are some of the many, many things we love to talk about. And we're so happy that you're also interested in reconceptualizing our enriched lives together.
You are both so inspiring. I'm just sitting here and like I've got like flashes of ideas. I always ask my interviewees, how do you practice self-care? And I'm thinking, I was about to gear up to that question. You both are so chill. I'm just so curious. What are your self-care?
Sure. I feel like part of self-care is I've worked at hard manual labor jobs, and part of it is not doing that. It was hard on my back, and I would, you know, have sore knees. Like my last four jobs, I was a hotel room attendant, and it's a lot of bending over and that sort of thing. And I feel like even if you have a job, you know, working at a computer, you can get carpal tunnel syndrome. And I feel like variety is the spice of life. So I practice self-care by having a variety of experiences. For instance, my backpack was kind of heavy hitchhiking across the country. So it was nice when we got a couple days staying at the same place with the same couch surfing host and I got a break. So I feel like we're working people too hard. And so that's the big way I practice self-care, is just trying to not work so much at hard jobs that I don't want to do just to make money. And Amanda and I have felt like money isn't even real, that nature is real, our relationships are real, our memories and that sort of thing. So focus on those things and don't be obsessed with making money. Yeah, and also I spend time doing what I love to do. I get a high from being creative. I love writing songs. And so, yeah, I practice self-care by spending as much time as I can doing things that's like a win all around, where if you can do something that I'm good at and I love to do it and I can help others with that, then it's just a win all around. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. I also kind of sometimes feel like hitchhiking is my heroine. It gives me such a high. It's like, what's going to happen? Where are we going to be? Where are we going to camp? You have no idea. And so our families express a lot of concern, and I understand. I understand the concern. There's stories out there. I don't know how many cars I've been in at this point, but it's my main form of transportation the last 2 years, so it's a lot of vehicles. So I would also say for my self-care is when you start to play this game of needs versus want, it is a downward spiral where you get to the point where you're like, I really basically need so little. And this is why this nonviolent communication is so wonderful, because it talks about what these needs are. And I think, you know, our needs for hugs, massages, connection, and touch. I think touch is so underrated in our society, and how much we, young people might go to the bar and this and that and hook up with people and this. I think it's just so many expressions of this unmet need for just regular, simple touch in our daily lives that's not valued in our culture. And he is grabbing for the microphone like nothing else.
Can you share the story of the guy that you gave a shoulder rub in the park?
Yeah.
Oh, that's such a beautiful story. Okay.
So we'll get back to self-care in one moment right after this. So I was going to North Carolina for the giant protest at a pig slaughterhouse, 30,000 baby pigs killed every day. And in Detroit, I got stuck at night. Okay, what will I do? I find a solution. The next morning, I went to continue. And this guy started walking with me because of my backpack. And he's like, are you homeless? And I was like, what do you mean by homeless? So we just kept walking together. And he was so humble. And you meet them right away. They're just so chill. So we went to the park together and we were sitting. And I was asking him a few questions about prison because he had been in prison for 17 years or something. He just got out last week. This is why he was kind of sort of finding his way. They don't get support when they come out of prison now. And I just said, would you like a shoulder rub? Because that's the one thing I can think, if you're in jail for that long, there's no women there, just women security guards. And you just saw a tear come down his eye while I was giving him a shoulder rub, because we were in the park with not many people and just had his shirt off. And I could just see that it was just, I could picture that being the major thing that would have been life enriching for him at that moment. And that's, yeah, that he would feel loved. And so that was very nice for me too. Here we go, John.
I've heard Amanda say this several times when we're traveling around. She'll say to someone, is there anything I can do to enrich your life? And so, yeah, Amanda thinks of, what does this person, what could enrich their lives? And so I'm learning a lot from Amanda, and I just wanted to share that I appreciate that.
Thanks, John. So my last note on self-care is that from the nonviolent communication, I feel like I've got more in touch with what my needs are and how to communicate them. This is such a key to communicate, to try to get them met. If I'm requiring empathy, so maybe I didn't know for 29 years of my life that when I'm talking to someone, I'm looking for an empathetic response. I can use my language and the tools that I have to engender what I'm looking for and to make my request in such a way that it is a request, it's not a demand, and explain it so that it's much more likely to get met if it's that I'm needing some support or understanding or some compassion and what that looks like to me in a specific action, and that I would feel quite peaceful and happy if they were willing to do that. So in terms of like material things and self-care, I would say I shouldn't feel guilty, but we live in extreme abundance. Just the life, the context, my family, it's extreme abundance. So things for that are okay. And then I just need to constantly think about the facts and the information that I don't, like, you know, sometimes I think, oh, I might like a manicure, but I know that nail polish isn't that good for me. And for makeup, I think, it's packaging and it's products sometimes tested. It's so hard to know. And women are beautiful in all different ways. If they want, okay. If they don't want, okay. And people say you need makeup to be professional sometimes. Let's have examples where it's not necessary, that really just our values, our fun, our everything can lead it differently.
What about you? You want to share?
Well, just sitting here with you feels like self-care. Really, you're such great role models, and I really hope the younger generation, even the older generation, really listen to this interview and follow you guys. I know you're planning to hitchhike from Berkeley to back to Ontario, and I'd love to touch base with you after that trip and see what kind of adventures you've been up to. It's been great having you on the show today, and can't wait to talk to you after Berkeley. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know. Go vegan, everybody.
Yeah, let's work together to enrich our community and our lives along with everyone else when we can.
Do you have any closing words?
Well, I think that practicing the golden rule is very important. Treat others as you'd like to be treated. And so that's what we've gotten from, like, during our journey from so many people. With people who picked us up hitchhiking, they thought, well, and if that was me at the side of the road, I'd want someone to help me. So they helped us. And like when we were in Kelowna, BC, and there was a Carol who saw us with our backpacks, you know, what are you doing? And we said, we're looking for a place to camp. You can camp in my backyard if you want. So it's really important. So I think to think, you know, what does that person need and how can I help them? And for instance, you know, we're vegan because of the golden rule, you know, treat others as I'd like to be treated. I wouldn't like anyone to kill me and eat me. So I don't want to do that to anyone else.
Yeah. With the golden rule, one thing that makes me extremely hopeful is that animal liberation is so important, because if we can feel empathy for a being that doesn't speak our language, that can't tell us their need to live a natural life, that is a high level of empathy. And when we reach that level and we can share information and get in touch with that, that opens so many doors for other social justice issues to develop our empathy and concern for other beings. So we have the golden rule. And recently someone shared with us the platinum rule, that treat others as they want to be treated. That's the whole next level of empathy. We might want the basic things, we have that in common, but then that extra level of thinking about them for their own sake, for what they want, and treating them as they want to be treated. Thank you so much, Jillian.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, June the 8th. We will be featuring an interview with founder of the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals and animal rights movement pioneer Ingrid Newkirk, who will be in Vancouver on June 14th. You can find out more about her speaking event on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver. We here want to connect with you online. Animal Voices is where you can go to stream shows or download the shows as podcasts. You can read our show blog there with detailed links. You can also subscribe to us via iTunes. I highly recommend going to animalvoices.org when you want something interesting to listen to. All you have to do is type in the search bar whatever topic you want to hear about that's animal rights or vegan related, and we've had so much there. And today we even featured an interview on minimalism, which I love. So stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show just either on Facebook or at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So today I'll be closing the show with a new song by John Sakars. It's called Compassionate as F-U-C-K, but don't worry, I am going to mute out the bad words here for the radio. So stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
I love DJ George.
I have got no interest in being cruel. I try to always follow the golden rule. Treat others as I'd like to be treated. My empathy will never be depleted. From everybody, everywhere I can learn. For knowledge and wisdom I yearn. I try to be humble, not conceited. With kindness every being will be greeted. On compassion notice, I won't tell you that you suck. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck. I won't drag you through the mud. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck. If you say something mean, I will not respond in kind. I'm compassionate, my kindness on my mind. If you say something nasty, I won't be nasty back. I'm compassionate, got no time to talk smack. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. I have got no interest in being cruel. I try to always follow the golden rule. Treat others as I'd like to be treated. My empathy will never be depleted. From everybody, everywhere I can learn. For knowledge and wisdom I earn. I try to be humble, not conceited. With kindness every being will be greeted. I'm compassionate. If you say something mean, I will not respond in kind. I'm compassionate, my kindness on my mind. If you say something nasty, I won't be nasty back. I'm compassionate, got no time to talk smack. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. I'm compassionate. If you say something mean, I will.
something nasty, I won't be nasty back. I'm a fashion nut, it's no time to talk smack. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. Hurt people, so if you try to hurt, I'll respond by being sweeter than the sweetest dessert. On the passion notice, I will tell you that you suck. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck. Compassionate, I'll drag you through the mud. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck. I'm compassionate, I won't tell you that you suck. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck. I'm compassionate, I won't drag you through the mud. I'll tell you that I love you and I wish you good luck.